Hey, thank you for joining us at UInc. My name is Ria Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you will pop into a time capsule for others to enjoy. This week's tool is technology and how tech can be utilized responsibly and as a handmaiden toward the completion of goals once I've demonstrated to you that this is a good tool for your brand. Secret that I'm one of the louder voices about the dangers of screen technology, and that has not changed. However, UInc's mission is to elevate our emotional intelligence and how to master areas of our lives. So let's discover how tech can be tackled. Let's start with exactly what we mean by technology. We commonly think of tech in terms of smartphones and computers because outside of a few robotics in our lives like a Roomba, that is all the tech we really interact with, and we do so as consumers. Reading infinite headlines, scrolling through social media outlets endlessly, binge-watching shows, repetitive gaming, and the latest rabbit hole, virtual reality. These all involve sedentary, passive, inconsequential activity, other than, of course, supporting those that create these platforms by investing our lives into their products and they are rewarded handsomely, I might add. So it is clear that folks want to get involved with technology, but do so in only non-productive and harmful ways in terms of depression, loss of social contact, isolation, withdrawal, sedentary lifestyles, which leads to physical health issues, loss of concentration, even loss of gray matter. In other words, changes to your brain's ability to process information and your ability to relate to the world due to your daily use of media and technology, which results in signs and symptoms of psychological disorders compounded by stress, sleeplessness, and a compulsive need to check in with all of your technology. There are many books out there that explain how this is happening, and our irresistible urge to engage with screens like the iPhone, iPad, Mac, and their Android counterparts. The first book is named just that, Irresistible: The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked by Adam Attler, a professor of psychology and marketing at NYU, tracks the rise of behavioral addiction and explains why so many of today's products are irresistible. The companies that design these products tweak them over time based on how the brain works until they become almost impossible to resist. And how this is happening is the exploitation of supernormal stimuli and how primal urges overran their evolutionary purpose. And this is illustrated in the book by Deidre Barrett, which explains how our once helpful instincts get hijacked in our garish modern world. And speaking of books, you can find all the scholarly books and peer-reviewed articles mentioned in our program on our webpage at wcbe.org. And if you miss a show, we podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, or any old podcast app as UInc Radio. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as well for sweet updates. Have a suggestion for the show or a person that needs to be on UInc or a question for me? Get in touch at tworogues.com or drop a line or just text UInc to 40691, a service provided by Baytech Mobile Solutions. But we can be in control. The book, Eye Disorder, Understanding Our Obsession with Technology and Overcoming Its Hold on Us by Larry Rosen, shows us that exercising self-control, we can rein the consumption of screens in, potentially saving ourselves and civilization. So our world is not going to change, and technology will continue to penetrate society even deeper, leaving us little chance to react to the seemingly daily additions to our lives. So when we talk about tech, we want to think of it in terms of chemical engineering, aeronautical engineering, environmental engineering, nanotechnology, software engineering, artificial intelligence, information technology bionics, you get the idea. And we want to start learning about it through books, have our kids attend coding workshops, robot building workshops. When learning about biology, learn about medical technologies, have them invent ways to clean up plastics, use technology to create solutions for habitats for wildlife, create holograms to see animals in nature instead of in zoo prisons or amusement parks like SeaWorld or circuses, develop tech around clean energy, create successful campaigns and organize about issues they care about, like the ones we have seen teens do about school violence and so on. Or like Elon Musk, build spaceships to travel to other planets, or theorize about the time-space continuum and the wrinkle in time. And yes, I know that that's a book, A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle, is a fantasy book and now a film, but those are the types of books that Elon Musk read that inspired him to travel to Mars and build a colony there, which he's in fact doing. And speaking of Elon Musk and other tech titans, it might surprise you to learn that they notoriously do not give their kids tech and send them to tech-free schools and refrain from using tech themselves, to some of them are just leaving the industry altogether. Steve Jobs, creator of the iPad, has been quoted as saying about his kids and the iPad that they've never used it and we don't allow it in our home. Apple's current chief executive, Tim Cook, has said, there are some things that I won't allow. I don't want them on a social network. Sean Parker, Chamath Palihapitiy, both Facebook executives, have said that not only are they conscientious objectors, but they don't let their kids use that stuff. They actually use a different word, but this is public radio. Chris Marcellino, one of the investors of Apple's system for push notifications, quit the industry to train as a neurosurgeon. Lauren Britcher, who created the Pull to Refresh Motion, is now devoting his time to building a house in New Jersey. Bill Gates didn't even give his kids access to cell phones until they turned 14. Be a creator, not a consumer. Be the feed, don't read the feed. The way to do so is to learn about and utilize useful technologies and not allow tech to use you. Never get high on your own supply. And that is a quote by Notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, from the song Ten Commandments of Crack, to advise crack dealers not to do crack cocaine. And this sentiment has been annexed by tech titans who understand that their creations are designed to exploit the vulnerability of human psychology, specifically the dopamine loop, just like the dopamine addiction loop created by the use of cocaine.
Number four, know you heard this before. Never get high on your own supply. Number five, never sell no crack where you rest at. I don't care if they want an ounce, tell them bounce. Number six.
Eric John Slangerup is the author of several children's books, including Dirt Boy, Monsterlicious, and Santa's Secret Scrapbook. His first book, Dirt Boy, made the Children's Choice Awards of 2001. He is also a poet who performs weekly with Writer's Block Poetry. Most recently, he created the application Story Snackers, which is a mobile app with a new approach to stories designed to help squeeze in more chances for time-crunched parents to read stories to their kids each day. It serves as a single source for multiple stories, each one made to take just a minute, available whenever, wherever. Mr. Slangerup hails from a background in advertising and new media and is intimately aware of how tech is utilized in branding and getting our attention and dollars. He has been an instructor at the Columbus College of Art and Design, as well as visiting author for the Greater Columbus Arts Council. When Mr. Slangerup isn't developing his app, he can be found traveling to a school near you, sharing the love of stories with children. He is married to wife Kristen and lives in Dublin with his children. Welcome, Mr. Slangerup.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have to say something that I've noticed as a common thing, a theme about you. You're obsessed with eating because the Dirt Boy book and Dirt Man looks at Dirt Boy as a snack. You use snacking as an approach to taking in stories, and you have a book named Monsterlicious. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, food is very important to me. I like that kind of my day revolves around that in a way. We try to take the stories and group them by theme, and we noticed that too many of them were themed around food.
Uh-huh.
So we had to break that up into smaller
groups. Because of your bias?
Yeah, yeah. So the stories within Story Snacker, several of them are food related.
Okay.
That was kind of, that wasn't a conscious effort. That just worked out that way.
Okay, so it's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
You're a foodie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like food.
Okay. Uh-huh.
It's an inspiration for the stories.
Very good. So you had the idea to combine storytelling, which is proven to accelerate cognitive development, advance literary skills, foster higher IQs in children, and you combined it with tech. Why did we need to use tech? Why can't children just read on the spot with their parents or sing something or smell something? Why do we need tech as a mediator?
That's a good question. I don't know if we need it. Came up with the idea because made the observation that there are a lot of wasted minutes now in our modern lives. And for me, what I've noticed is that technology might help fill some of those wasted moments. Could be an opportunity for story time, like to insert more moments where you have a chance to be at bat as a parent, as a storyteller. Because for me, I think about, in my case, I'm a story time enthusiast. I write children's books. Mm-hmm. I'm a parent. I have 5 children. I've been doing it for a long time. I love it. And there's still a lot of days out there where the moment just does not present itself. Mm-hmm. I have to work late. Something happens. I'm traveling. Whatever it is, like, you don't have that moment every day as a parent where you're sitting in front of the fire with this tone, you know, the unabridged tales of Brothers Grimm.
Right.
And you have all the time in the world. That happens sometimes, yeah, but not all the time. So my feeling is, if you have that moment, go do that. Go take hardcover books and have it. This is not meant to replace that.
Gotcha.
But when you're sitting in the checkout line and you don't have quite enough time to do anything else, but you have enough time to, you're with your child and you and it's literally 60 seconds, this is to turn that into a moment that could be memorable as opposed to just kind of gone.
Right. And, you know, I've been in that checkout line and it's like, come on, be quiet. We're almost there. I'm going to take you to the car. And then it ends up being this crazy space. And it probably would have been helpful to be able to say, okay, hold on a second and get that 1 minute thing, which is exactly what I would have needed to get through that moment. Waiting at line anywhere would have been a great time to have that.
Yeah, because so I'm not saying you do this, but I see a lot of parents do this. They're waiting in line. The phone is with them. The phones aren't going away. And I've become a lot more kind of practical in my approach to problem solving as in my old age.
Right.
They're going to pull out the phone.
Yeah.
They're going to pull it out regardless. And if that's not an option, if there's not an option to have kind of a three-way interactive experience with their child, when their child is there, they're going to pull out their phone and they're, what are they going to do? They're going to check their feed. They're going to check their inbox and have an isolating experience.
Yep.
There's actually a term for it now. It's called fubbing, where you're phone snubbing your
kids.
And like this. So I'm hoping this is kind of like an anti-fubbing device. Like it's an option where you could, you also have that as an option as opposed to checking social media when your kids are around, because it communicates to them that they're not important.
Right. Absolutely. And one of the things that we talked about before we got started was, you know, I asked does it have an option where it reads to the kids? And you said no. And there was a reason for that.
Yeah. By design, no, because I feel like those kinds of technologies, well, they already exist. They exist in spades. So I don't feel like I love writing stories, but I don't want to just create another one of those out there. I already feel like there's plenty of that out there, to like handoff technology, where it's a babysitter.
Right.
This is designed in the same spirit as when Sesame Street first came onto the market.
Mm-hmm.
People had the same concern. Oh, it's a new technology. Can it be an education tool? And they created it purposefully so that parents would parody current shows. And they're still doing that now in the HBO reboot. It's great. Like, I sit down with my kids.
I didn't know there was an HBO reboot.
It's really great.
Okay.
I sit down with my 2 youngest and we watch it. And they parody House of Cards.
I've seen them do one for
Game of Thrones.
And there's an app for that. They said that. Yeah, okay. Oh, they do shows.
It's great. So, but I sit down, I find myself with them, talking with them about it. And that is when that very particular kind of cognitive development happens between a parent, a child, and that third object.
Mm-hmm.
For me, success is if that happens with the app, that you have the three kind of interacting together. That's what story time is. That's read aloud. And that's what for me, when I was listening to all the negative things, like the areas of concern about technology, because I have those too.
Right.
I have the love-hate, hate, the love-hate-hate relationship with technology. And I think that's well-founded as a parent. I think that, like, if you have that relationship with technology and you're worried about it, as storytellers, that's what humans do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been adapting how we tell stories through technology from the time we've been doing cave paintings. It's
what,
like, we take that story and we tell the next generation. And my worry, even more than technology right now, my bigger concern would be, is storytelling and story time going to get squeezed out of our early lived experience as humans. And will that somehow alter in some fundamental way our human experience? Because that's one of the things that distinguishes us as a species. So I don't want to get overly important about story time, but I think it's really, really important that that continues in every possible way. It can, like, we give it every advantage to exist. We designed it so that you can use it one-handed. So the idea, like, if you have a, like me sometimes, if I have one on a hip and another like hanging on my leg, I can pull it in one fell swoop, you know, one-handed. I can actually direct the story with my thumb. And we've talked, like, I don't do the development end. I write the stories, I draw the pictures, but I've got two partners. One of them's a developer, and we joke a little bit about how it's not as intuitive. They're a little bit younger than me, and it's not as intuitive. The technology's not as intuitive for me in general. So there's like making it dummy-proof and then making it Eric-proof. You know, like it has to work in a way that it's natural for me just to, in a crunched moment, to be able to pull that out. And I've heard someone say, what was it? There's a photographer that said the best camera you have is the one, the best camera is the one you have with you, you know, and that's becoming more and more like.
That's true.
It's the one you have with you. And so my wife said the same thing.
Should we say jinx and then there's
So my wife said, well, that's the same with the story. Like the best book is the one you have with
you. Absolutely.
I think that's what's made it helpful for parents. Right. When I've heard parents tell me like, oh, I was at the barbershop. I wasn't planning to do that, but it came in handy there. Yep. It's like, my thesis just got proven, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was happy about that. I wanted to make it portable, and I wanted to design it for modern life that it's in 1 minute increments. So they, like literally, like also, there have been times when my kids have said, if I'm confessing, and they said, hey, do you got time for a story? And there have been moments throughout my, like my history as a parent, I've said, oh, hold on, I've skimmed through something. I've skipped a page. They've called me out on it.
Yes,
all the things.
Yes, I've done that.
I've heard parents do all this stuff, you know, and you feel bad about it later. Like, this is designed to beautifully fill 1 minute
of
space.
It's perfect.
And if you have 3 minutes, you read three.
Right.
So it's for that space as opposed to, I had a teacher tell me, I was at a school last weekend, and she said, this is great for when I light the, she's a media specialist. They used to call them librarians, but they're media specialists.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're media specialists.
Okay, thank you.
Now. What we used to know as librarians.
Right.
She says, when I have the kids stand in line and we're waiting to, you know, we're queuing them up and we have the next class coming in and they're there for about 1 to 2 minutes, it's not enough time to do anything. She says, but I love that now I can take, like on an iPad or a phone, I can pull that up or they project it on their smart board because some schools are like super wired. They were great. How they're just, it's, everything's kind of plugged in. You can actually have a 1 minute story time while they're standing in line as opposed to starting to get bored and punch each other and do like the other things that happen. I hadn't thought about it for that kind of scenario, but it works. That makes me happy.
So earlier in the show, we mentioned that the tech titans send their kids to low tech schools. We talked about those smart boards. They keep their homes low tech, even as purveyors of tech. What is the approach of tech in your house? Because one of the reasons behind the creation of Story Snackers was to use it in an advantageous way. So what do you do at home?
Well, we try and find a lot of reading opportunities and a lot of learning opportunities. I was talking about those moments, like at the checkout line, I think that's a great moment to pull out Story Snacker. This weekend, we were at Franklin Park Conservatory. It's a magical place. We never pulled our phones out. Maybe to take a picture of the flowers, but that's not going to be a time when we compete with the wonder of what's already around us. So we try to find the moments when, like when that's the best option, we will pull that out. Same with screen time on television. We're kind of picky about shows that we feel like have a good interactive like content to them. So we have two now. We just, our youngest is 2 years old and we didn't let, I mean, it was hard because we had a four-year-old. We tried to wait until two for any screen time
at
all.
I did the same thing.
But now she's two, so she like she's ready. And so we will limit to a show and we will give a, we'll say, hey, we're going to watch.
And do you use a streaming service? I don't want to say one or the other.
There's so much content out there now through, so we're kind of like right now we're kind of partial, and this changes. We're kind of partial to Dora the Explorer because it's interactive.
I remember like that.
And we're partial to Sesame Street, as I mentioned. A couple of other shows. We've introduced a few Pixar movies, but the tricky thing about those is that we've had to learn how to break them up because we don't want them.
It's too much.
We don't want to sit there for an hour and a half. So we say, okay, we're going to watch this until like the next. The song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first song cues up and then we're off to do something. So they know that's coming, and then we pause it.
That's great.
So breaking that up in smaller bites, I think, is healthy. And then we say, now we're going to go play with the dollhouse, or now we're going to go read. Mm-hmm. And we go to the book, the real, actual analog bookshelf.
Yes.
And they can spend as much time there as they want. Like, that's right. I'm not as concerned about, like, if they get lost in stories there. That's going to be...
Because they're,
like,
using their imagination. Yeah. They're representing what they read in their minds differently.
Yeah. But I'm not as concerned, though, about this. When people tell me about their concerns about screen time, I distinguish between screen time, the overarching, what screen time is, and what I would distinguish as screen time alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I
using as it a babysitter.
When I see in the restaurant someone handing the iPad.
I go crazy.
I understand, like... Parenting's hard, so I'm not judging.
Hard.
Like, it's, you know what? I just had that situation this weekend when I was with some friends. Like, I understand when that happens. I understand why.
I've done it too.
Sometimes you just want to take a bite of your food, and, like, I get it.
Yes,
but
it's
I'm
like,
not.
Here.
I want to. That's a last resort for me, because I do feel like there's other things we can learn. There's other ways we can coach that moment, and I feel like occasionally that's a. Because it's easy. It's a way to surrender.
Yeah, sure.
Just hand that over. So I'm certainly not looking for Story Snacker to fill that role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've designed it in a way that it can't.
Mm-hmm.
You have to power it yourself by reading aloud.
Right.
And there's the other kinds of moments, the things that happen that way. I think that, I think that's it's a balance. And as technology continues to, like, we just got an Echo in our home this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't had one before. The girls are finally figuring out how to enunciate in a way that they can get that thing to play the theme song to Frozen, because that's all they want. And that's great that they do that. And I just want to make sure that we balance that along with singing time ourselves.
Right.
And other kinds, like, all the, so as a part of the mix, great. When that's all that's happening, and they're not at the age yet where they want to just sit and watch YouTube videos.
Right.
But we're going to have to, we'll manage that as it goes.
Right. So you were once an ad executive. Mm-hmm. How does advertising use technology in pernicious ways? And is that the reason why you left the industry?
Oh, well, gee, all my colleagues are going to hear this. It's not quite as pernicious as maybe some might assume. I don't, advertising, it's easy to make a villain out of advertising because it's an interruption into our life. It powers a lot of things. So as an advertiser, like, having done it for, 20 plus years, my feeling was always like, if I'm going to make the world a better place as a creative communicator, if that's going to exist, if something is legal to be in our economy, you should be able to advertise it.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make that as interesting and as engaging as possible. And I do think advertising has upped its game.
Mm-hmm.
On the targeting and the, the data collection and all of that kind of aspect of advertising, the personalization of advertising, I do worry about that a little bit. I mean, I get just as freaked out as the next guy when I'm looking at a pair of socks and then later on Facebook, I see that same pair of socks, on my feed and I go, how did they know?
Right.
I've seen that kind of cross platforms too in other ways that it is strange for me. Like, that really makes me feel kind of like I'm in the middle of a Big Brother-like moment. But... advertisers, most of the people, the creative professionals I know, they're some of the best people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're interested in making the world better. They're interested in making the world interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested in doing right by their clients to help them do the right thing, like to get on board, like to make the right decision. So, again, I think that's something that it's been a crazy wild west the last decade or so because of new technology emerging. We still call it new. It's not really new anymore, but new and emergent technology.
Right.
We're still learning, like, how to do that. It's not so much about a message as it is about a conversation. And people joke about, like, how much of a conversation do you really want to have with your brand of razor? Like, maybe not so much. I don't know.
Just tell me how it works.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we have a lot more control now in how much advertising can be a part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that forces advertising to up its game in terms of level of entertainment and interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing because the market will bear that out.
Right.
We will occasionally, when I go to the theater and if there's a long format, like, advertisement, sometimes it's as well produced as the movie.
Right.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm okay with that. I'm not as much with the interruptions. So so I think they'll continue to get better because they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think so much that they're a you've got a lot of smart people in advertising, some of the smartest people I ever got to work with. And I think they'll continue to find ways to just do right by their clients and also by their audiences.
So you described yourself as a cookie snatcher. Uh-huh. So what is your tech cookie, basically your tech guilty pleasure?
Oh, my tech guilty pleasure. Oh, good question. Well, I am an avid podcast listener. It's become hard for me on a daily basis when I'm driving in my car. I always think, oh, I could be part of a conversation. So I love listening to podcast specifically about other writers or other creators, hearing how they do their craft. I don't know if that's a guilty, but I actually feel pretty good about that. Uh-huh. I'm trying to think if I've got something.
I think that's why they've gotten so popular, is because people feel like they can have it in the background and they're getting some value of it, because most podcasts seem to have some value. I've seen some around there that aren't that, like they're just getting high or something like that.
But. Yeah, yeah. That, and now that I've finally embraced the Echo, and I've learned that I can just kind of, I try and test that thing on anything. So now when I do most of the cooking at home. So now when I'm cooking, like if I'm making tacos,
uh-huh.
It's going to be Luis Miguel that's on the, like if it's, there's a full theme in the kitchen whenever, you know, you know, the family walks in, and I'm like, oh yes. It is all the way Mexican tonight,
nice.
including the tunes.
Nice.
That's been fun too. That makes me enjoy the time I'm living in right now.
Great.
In a way that I think I'm pretty lucky.
Great. I think so too. And I think we were lucky to enjoy living some of your time here on U Inc. Thank you for coming in, Eric.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you very much, oh, Mr. Roboto, for doing what he has to.
A word from our person on the street. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on technology?
Well, technology, particularly when it comes to radio, in particular, which I do quite a bit of, radio is it's a very good media. The internet has become the next radio, the next media, particularly, especially with YouTube being as big as it is. Radio going to more to the internet, a lot more kids are tuning that way. It's the wave of the future, actually, especially because internet has been such a broad spectrum of stations and things that you can't get on just on-air radio. Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, feel free to share which radio station you're on, but how do radio people like you and I feel about podcasts, I wonder?
They're good. They're good. I don't have a problem with podcasts. You know, I do podcasts myself, so, you know, I don't have a problem with that. We have, you know, all the particular radio I do is on the internet. But the nice thing about it, I'm not limited to what a major corporation, and I don't want to put any major corporation down, but some of these folks say, okay, this is the format, this is what you have to follow. I like the idea of being free enough to say, okay, no, I want to do this particular item. I think this is important to our local people or particular audience that I'm looking for. It's important to them, so I want to stay in that particular realm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to have to be limited on the amount of time that I can stay with that particular subject.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Maria Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.